Greetings, my friend. We are all interested in the future, for that is where you and I are going to spend the rest of our lives. And remember, my friend, future events such as these will affect you in the future. You are interested in the unknown, the mysterious, the unexplainable. That is why you are here. And now, for the first time, we are bringing to you the full story of what happened on that fateful day. We are giving you all the evidence on the secret testimony of the miserable souls who survived this terrifying ordeal. The incidents, the places. My friend, we cannot keep this a secret any longer. Let us punish the guilty. Let us reward the innocent. My friend, can your heart stand the shocking facts about grave robbers from outer space?
This is the emergency podcast system. This is not a test. Movies are bombing all over the country. They are posing as movies you already know. They may already be in your theaters, your neighbor's home, or even your own. Do not panic. Specialists have been dispatched. They will help you identify these pretenders and defend you against this invasion of the remake. Please stand by for further instructions.
Welcome to the Invasion of the Remake podcast. I am your host, Jason Bishop, and with me today, as always, is Trish Coughlin.
Hey, everybody.
And Sam Stepanenko.
Hello, hello. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, depending on when you're listening to this.
Yes.
Yeah, could be any time of day.
Yeah. As we're recording this, Golden Globes just passed. It is award season, so I thought we'd go completely opposite from good.
Yeah, that would be an understatement.
It's award-winning, but in a different way.
Yes. If the Razzies had existed at that point, it would have cleaned up.
But strangely enough, watching some of the performances in the old one and some of the performances in the new one, and I'm like, some of the old performances are pretty good.
How
did they get worse?
Yeah, I was actually moderately impressed by quite a number of the performances in the original movie.
Yeah,
exactly.
I love how we haven't said the name yet.
Ah.
Yes, well, that is my plan, to just leave it alone. No, it's Plan 9 from Outer Space, originally titled Grave Robbers from Outer Space. It was completed as Grave Robbers from Outer Space in 1957, but didn't actually get a theatrical release until 1959 as Plan 9 from Outer Space, written and directed by Edward D. Wood Jr. Mm-hmm. at a budget of $60,000.
Which, I have to say, it still looks pretty good for $60,000. Like, some of the stuff is good.
Oh, come on.
No, some of the stuff is good. Like, just, I don't know, the film quality of it is decent.
I'll give you that, but the graveyard and
The graveyard
catacomb
bad.
And the flying saucers and...
I'm also looking at the credits.
Hey, no, the flying saucers, everybody, thanks to Tim Burton's Ed Wood, kind of fucked that up.
Yeah.
And... everybody assumes they're like paper plates and stuff, and
they're actually model kits.
Oh, okay.
of UFOs
that you could buy in like at Marshall's or whatever the heck their department stores were back in the 1950s. But yeah, it's just they looked cheesy. Right?
True,
yeah.
But I mean, like for special effects, I'd put this up against Wolverine and it would win. That terrible one with the Ryan Reynolds having his mouth sewn shut.
Okay,
that the effects on that were awful.
Yeah, I don't know. Might have to put them up against each other.
I think we should.
Because I really think we should. Trying to forget it.
Oh, I know. That's the part I couldn't forget. Like, there's some stuff, some trauma you can't undo.
Yeah. And honestly, I don't know why, but somebody decided to remake this in 2015. Written and directed by John Johnson. Yeah,
yep.
No, that's
who is
that's
the cop?
Not a, that's not a fake name.
That doesn't sound like an new Alan Smithy, does it?
Yeah, he was Patrolman Kelton. I couldn't find a budget on that, but they definitely had a little bit money to spend on that.
Well,
one.
There's a musician, Jack Johnson, just putting that out there.
Yeah, but how...
John Johnson.
How horrible were your parents to name you John Johnson?
There was a person who lived in Granite when I was growing up whose name was Detmer Detmers. Not even lying. Found it in the phone book.
You know, I work in customer service and I see a lot of weird names, but John Johnson has got to be
I just assume it's like a failed porn name that he stuck with.
John Johnson. That would work, though.
Yeah, right?
Yep.
Hi, I'm John Johnson.
Especially if he plays a character that frequents prostitutes, right?
That would have been my response. No, what's your real name?
Yeah, it's either an unfortunate misnomer or it is a fake Alan Smithy style name.
Yeah. So he wrote and directed the remake as well, and trying to make sense of what Ed Wood had written and put down on paper.
And he was also in it too.
Ed Wood's movie starred Gregory Walcott, Tom Keene, Mela Nurmi, Criswell, and Tor Johnson, Lyle Talbot, and Bela Lugosi.
Briefly.
In his last credited appearance.
Credited appearance. He was, by the time they shot this, he'd already passed away. This was all stock footage that was probably for another shoot, and it was silent, so they just kind of rode around it and used it.
And they blended in with another guy who just wore the cape, but only showed so much of his face to be his character.
Well, and that gentleman was Tom Mason. He was Lugosi's stand-in, and director, Ed Wood, his wife's chiropractor.
Yep.
Yes. It was horrible.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, it was just awful.
Even hiding his face behind the cape at all times, it's so obviously bad. Like, so obviously not Bella.
Like, I don't know. If you were going to do it, maybe just have those videos of Bella just as flashbacks of some kind and not part of the people who were there.
Yeah. And let's keep in mind, Bella was not playing a vampire.
Oh, no.
Despite acting like one.
Yes.
And much like Vampyra was not, and Vampyra was the stage name for Mela Nurmi. Yeah. And yeah,
who didn't want to talk.
No, so she didn't want a speaking role.
But have you seen like the size of
her? I think that's because she knew how shit this movie is.
Her waist was unbelievably tiny.
I know, right?
It scared me.
I mean, it was.
Where are her organs?
Yeah, it was like actually quite distracting. Whenever she's on the screen, it's like all you can look at is that tiny little waist. I mean, she didn't need to speak because even if she'd spoken, you wouldn't have been paying attention. It's like,
how are you living?
Yeah.
And she lived into her 80s, late 80s.
Yeah.
I know. Wow.
Yeah. So I don't know where the organs went, but up and behind the kidneys and lungs and things.
Maybe she was a real vampire and like she just lived longer. It's just an extended life. She didn't have regular organs.
And if the name Vampyra doesn't sound familiar, Elvira kind of nabbed her gig. There was a failed lawsuit, I guess. Maybe too much time had passed, or I'm not sure how that lawsuit went exactly, but Elvira came out on top of that one, I guess.
I read about that, and it was the courts actually decided that it was not appreciably the same. Like it was not a direct ripoff. It is so ripoff.
Like, how can you not see it? Like, the outfit is legit the same.
Well, I think when it comes down to it,
maybe a little more tit.
The way Elvira was portrayed compared to Vampyra were quite different.
Yeah.
That's what they were referring to as.
Yeah, I guess.
Yes, there's a similarity, but
the look is totally Vampyra. Yes.
But the character itself was different, and that was different enough that they felt that it wasn't.
Yeah, and Vampyra was an old TV host.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she would do those Monster of the Week movies, and probably one of the first, like, if not the first. Like, she was really early TV host, monster movie host.
Yeah, like, that was a thing, what they used to do, and which I think was amazing, and I'm upset they don't do it, is you'd have a host who was with you for a movie.
They still do that with local stations. Yeah, it's more prevalent in the U.S. It's more for smaller cities rather than the big ones.
Yeah, and Elvira still has a syndicated show. We just don't get it here.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, well, there is Mr. Lobo, who is plays Criswell in the remake from 2015, and he is a horror movie TV host.
Yes.
So, there you go. It happens. Yeah. It still goes on. And
I just wish we had one.
Criswell, the real Criswell, was a fortune teller / psychic. I don't know. None of it. I tried to find some footage. I guess nothing from his show actually exists anymore that he had. But some of the stuff I was reading, he was about 80% correct. But I don't know.
Yeah, I think he was huge briefly. And then they didn't save anything.
Yeah. Now, his intro to this movie really sets a tone.
I know.
Now, it sets the tone for the future, which is going to be very important to your future. Oh, fuck. What was that? That had to be written by Ed Wood. True. But some people believe that was actually part of his show. Like, yeah. That was integrating a lot of the things to his intro to his show. And if that's the case, I'm like, oh, how did anybody take you seriously?
Yeah, really.
It was a different time. It was the 50s.
Your sense of the English language and oh, so bad.
Well, and I think that, yeah, Ed Wood was definitely responsible for that because so much of the dialogue in this movie is bad.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think with that sort of intro, I think Ed Wood was sort of trying to do, well, combine Criswell with those Twilight Zone openings that seem very profound, but he couldn't do it, you know?
Well, Ed Wood was literally using all the people around him to make this thing. Oh, so. Sure.
Yeah, friends, family. Like, yeah, he didn't...
His girlfriend's chiropractor.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, there's not a lot of actual talent.
No, I mean, his star power was certainly in Bela Lugosi, the only star he really had any kind of relationship with. Mm-hmm. You know, they became friends in Bella's Twilight years.
And he was very supportive of Bella continuing to work, because Bella wanted to keep working, even though he was past his prime.
Oh, yeah.
He was still trying to do stuff, and he had been so pigeonholed, I think, he was struggling with a lot of that.
Yeah, and, but you know what? Ed Wood kept going back to it, too.
True, right? That's true. Like, I think Bella was finally like, I guess this is what's going to happen now. I might as well do it.
Yeah, even though his movies kept flopping, like, they all kind of became these cult films, and in a way created careers for people like Vampyra and Tora Johnson.
So he was the Nicolas Cage of his era?
Oh, no.
Were you talking cult?
You're giving Nicolas Cage far too much credit.
No. The closest we have to Ed Wood these days is Uwe Boll, who thinks he can direct and write movies, but can't. Except Ed Wood was a lot nicer of a person.
Yeah. Well, didn't I think, like, wasn't Uwe Boll, like, doesn't he legitimately do that so people get a tax break because it flops?
I don't know. That might make a lot more kind sense. Of sense, in, at least in his brain.
Like, if you make invest in my movie, it will never make any money. You get a tax break because you lost money on it.
Well, the thing is his movies make just enough money for him to keep getting to make movies.
Yeah,
that's what I'm going with. Yeah.
Well,
and plus, like, if you think how bad they all are and how bad they do, it has to be something like a tax break because I can't really justify any of this.
Mm-hmm.
It does boggle the mind that how this guy keeps getting work.
And how he keeps attracting movie stars all the time, too.
Really, yeah.
Big names.
Some very big names, right? But back to Ed Wood, I mean, he did it all on his own, right?
Oh, yeah.
He found his own financing. He never worked in the studio system.
No, yeah, he had no idea actually how to make movies, edit shows, despite the fact he'd already made two or three by the time he got to this one, so...
But there's still, like, there's a naivete to it that sort of you can totally see. It's somebody who likes movies, but doesn't quite, they'll do something, oh, it's good enough.
Yeah, he's a big fan of it. It's good enough. I can't afford to shoot it again, so that has to be good enough.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I think this is a good time to run the trailer, and we'll really start diving in, because there's a lot to talk about.
Oh, my God.
It is safe to state that the grandchildren of some of the people in this theater will not be born on Earth. They come from the bowels of hell, a transformed race of walking dead. Zombies guided by a master plan for complete domination of the Earth. Plan 9 from outer space. Starring the most nightmarish cast ever, Bela Lugosi, the seductive Vampyra, and Tora Johnson as the walking dead.
Turn off your electro gun! No!
Bullets bounce off their bodies. Rockets, missiles, jets cannot stop their death ship. What earthly power can stop this terror? For a glimpse of things to come, see this blast of screen suspense. for it could be happening right now.
You know, I kind of wish I would have been in the audience in the 50s to see this in the theater and gone, what the fuck?
I guarantee you that audience reactions in the 50s are very different than our weird attachment to bad film in our current day and age. Because we really are attached to these really terrible films.
Yeah, we are. And this one's a doozy because it's a howl. Right at the beginning, it kind of loses me midway
for a little while.
It gets exhausting, and then you get near the end, and it picks right back up again because it's like solar and night, and these crazy explanations that try to tie all these weird ideas together.
I know exactly where it lost me when I was watching it was the scene where the lead guy's wife. I'm sorry, I can't remember character names right now.
Paula,
where she's running back and forth and back and forth and back and forth through the same graveyard. I'm like, gone.
Oh,
that
lost
me. I know why he did it the way he did it, but that was where I checked out for a little while. I know there was some stuff right after that just didn't sink into my head at all because
that explains a lot of why I don't remember that entire scene. I remember her running once, and that means that I obviously really checked out.
It took me quite a while to start piecing things together in this film because the whole film's pieced together. Yeah. So trying to make the narrative make sense along the way. Now you've got the stock footage of Bela Lugosi smelling flowers and there's a funeral scene and it's supposed to be his wife, but his wife is Vampira, which is baffling because the wife would be about the same age as the daughter that's also in the
second wife.
I don't know. I'm guessing. I guess it's an old dude that snagged a young wife after the first one either knocked off or he got divorced or something. Because it's the same in the remake.
Yes.
They keep the wife really young.
Yeah. And I love that. And I love the way that they handled it, too. The explanation for him wearing the cape and his sudden passing, right? I really thought that was actually probably one of the better handled moments in that remake.
Oh, yeah. Like, I like the fact that I have an explanation for it.
Yeah.
Why is he dead all of a sudden?
Well, in the first one, I'm like, did he just walk out in traffic? Like, is that what happened?
Like you said, I tried to watch this thing three times, fell asleep three times. So I've lost pieces of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't really explain his death. I mean, it's all done via the voiceover where it says, and that was the last time we saw him alive again.
I was kind of led to believe he walked into traffic.
Yeah. So much voiceover.
Yeah, there was a lot because he was trying to fill in those holes, right? He was trying to save money because, I mean, voiceover is a great way to save money, right? To share their narrative without having to film a bunch of extra shots. So, and I mean, he didn't have an awful lot of money.
No.
I mean, they probably were stealing equipment or borrowing equipment, I guess. And
well, if you watch the Ed Wood movie, there's a lot of borrowing that happens.
That's a fictionalized version of what's there, but there's, you know, I did rewatch Ed Wood somewhere in between watching these movies just to kind of fill in some gaps. And then, of course, I read up on the movie itself and what's true and what's not in there. And there's actually quite a bit that Tim Burton got right while keeping that movie fairly stylized. And I mean, he definitely made some changes along the way. But there's a lot that's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, Tim obviously has an affection for Ed Wood. And I mean, even the movie even felt very much like an Ed Wood film in the way it would, the fact that it was shot in black and white. And there were some moments that I remember being somewhat disjointed the way it was put together. And you can tell that was a deliberate homage on Tim Burton's part.
Mm-hmm. Right? Oh, for sure.
But that's not the movie we're talking about.
No.
No. No, but inevitably we're going to talk a little bit about that as well.
Of course, inevitably.
Yeah. Now, when they opened up on the graveyard, Lugosi's crying graveside, and the priest is just staring at his book. Like, that's like everything sets the tone of what you're going to get within the first 5 minutes, that terrible intro by Criswell, and then this priest not doing anything, just staring at a book. I'm going to at least assume they got a hold of an actual Bible, but...
I'm going to assume that the priest said a moment of silence and just stared at his book. That's what I'm hoping.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm just like, that's the weird thing. The voiceover fills in some of the blanks, but sometimes I find myself just trying to fill in some of the blanks.
Well, and it's funny, when I was watching, when Jay was watching it, in City, he was watching it, mentioning how much fun he was having during that first few 10 minutes, we were talking via text, and then I started watching, and I'm like, holy smokes, holy Hard Rock Zombies.
Yes. Yeah,
well, because we're watching that scene, and as the gravediggers come in, and by the way, those were the finances of the film that were from the church. That's how they financed this nice. Movie. So the gravediggers were doing their thing, and I kept switching back from night and day and night yes. and day and night and day. The whole movie was like that.
Yeah.
Every time all the graveyard yeah. shots were at night, regardless of where the shots that were setting up those scenes were.
Yeah.
And most of the time we're just
anybody want to go for lunch? Oh no, we have to over the graveyard midnight.
Yeah. Crazy. Like, oh my gosh. There's no continuity in this movie.
None whatsoever.
Yeah. And I love how the actors are fucking with Ed Wood to see if he'll notice with things in the shots. Nothing. That yeah. cop that's constantly pointing his gun at people and himself and like itching his head with the point at the
I love that. Gun. And I love the way that. They paid homage to that in the remake,
yep.
yeah.
which was awesome. I loved that.
The guy's talking with his hands and his gun, and it's like, yes. hey, would you quit pointing that at me? You're always doing that.
that's the thing. Like the remake, they took a bunch of those parts. And they're like, okay, we gotta address some of this. We're gonna do it directly,
and they do it really good. There was a scene with Paula in the original where her husband's away as a pilot for long periods of time, Jeff Trent. And she alludes to, you know, oh, I don't get lonely. I have my pillow. What are you talking yeah. about? I don't get it. Like, I started like, what are you doing with the pillow?
Like, people explain it.
The pillow stayed.
It's,
although they do a great job in the remake explaining yeah. what that pillow is. And it turns to be kind of the confidant. That's
they
explain the smell and yeah. stuff. Yeah, but
they do explain that in the original.
Yeah, not nearly in the same detail.
No. No, she's
more disgusting thoughts can be made.
Yes.
Yeah, if they made it a body pillow, it would have gotten real weird real fast.
I know, right?
Very weird.
I just kept thinking, so she's humping the pillow a lot.
Maybe.
Yeah, but certainly spooning it.
yeah.
Hugging it, cuddling up with it. Now, I don't know. I don't know much about like airline pilots, but are they gone that long at a stretch?
Not typically.
No.
That was my confusion.
No, because they're put on routes, right? So they might be gone 3-4 days at a time, and they come back and
yeah.
get a couple days off before the next one.
So yeah, I'm like, what airline is he freaking working for?
Well, and that's the other thing about the remake is he flies small charter flights, right? Yeah. Like those tiny yeah. little flights. So he may be working like out in like Alaska for a couple months at a time and doing like puddle jumpers, right? And now he's on his way home.
Yeah.
And that would make sense to me. Right, I had to infer it.
Even then, yeah, it wasn't clear to me. I was like, "How on earth is he gone for that long?"
Yeah, no, and that would make sense if he's a puddle jumper pilot for oil field or something like that, and he's on his way home.
Yeah, but I mean, like, why have like is that plane just now going to a part of the country where they don't have a main office? Is that it? Because that's the point that's kind of troubling to me. If he's going to an area where he's doing like runs with puddle jumpers, that's their main hub. So he's obviously going way out of the way of that main hub.
Well, I'm thinking he's probably contracted to a corporation yeah. or something like yeah. that.
Well, I mean, right. he lives in a small town, too, so he's probably commuting to work just to get to the plane. Because yeah. I'm guessing this town probably, if they have an airstrip at all, it can only accommodate yeah. little things. So yeah.
Interesting town name.
Yes, read it backwards.
Yeah. Yes, it's... I wrote it down.
Nilbog.
It's Nilbog, USA. Well, did they have a name for it in Ed Wood's? Because I don't think they did.
I don't think so.
The remake calls it Nilbog, and it's actually, that's a shout out to a different movie that's probably far worse than, it's the new champion of terrible movies, and it is...
Oh God, my mind's going blank, but I know Goblin is the thing Troll 2?
Yes, that is exactly right.
Thank you. Oh,
it is
God,
Troll
brain,
2.
It works.
I was just pointing at her. We didn't practice that at all.
No.
Obviously.
No, legit. Everything went blank.
But you got it.
I
you
did
got it.
It.
It's fine, and editing will make it faster.
Nice.
Yeah, Troll 2, I guess, is the new champion.
Of worst movie of all time?
Yeah.
I can't say I've ever seen it, so...
I've seen the documentary on it. I'm good.
See, I think, yeah, I think I'll see the documentary about it without actually seeing it.
Yeah.
It's like how you can't look directly at an eclipse or you'll hurt your eyes.
Oh, my God.
You just do it like a little bit to the side.
We've made it through this, and we made it through Hard Rock Zombies, which...
We can do anything.
We can do anything, right? Because I'm sorry, but I can't imagine that Troll 2 could possibly be worse than
Hard Rock Zombies. Zombies, true.
You're wrong.
I don't know. Like, do you think we're practicing for, like, if we ever get tortured in a certain way with bad movies? Like, if we're Mystery Science Theater 3000, we'll win?
Oh, for sure. For sure.
We're certainly building up an immunity.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Jay and I sat through Car 54, Where Are You? Which is on my list of absolute worst movies for sure.
Like, and we walked out of better movies than that.
We did. I don't know. I actually think that
was it. Endurance test at that point.
I think that was the first time that we had seen something that terrible in the theater, and we were like, you know what? We can't. It's got to get better. And we realized after that, it's like, if it's that bad, don't bother.
Yeah, right. Because we walked out of House Party 3.
Yes.
Nice. Well, I've walked out of some movies that people are like, why did you do that? I walked out of The Accidental Tourist. I fucking hated that movie. Won an Academy Award winners out of it.
Yeah.
And I freaking hated
it. Sam and I walk out of terrible movies.
Yes.
I do walk out of terrible movies, too, but that's a terrible movie. I'm sorry. It is. It's not good.
I can't argue against it because I haven't seen it. So.
But it's weird. As I've gotten older, I'm more likely to like pull the trigger on leaving. Because I'm like, I'm going to die soon. I can't waste this time.
At this point, if I'm paying to see a movie and it's like, generally I get screeners these days. So yeah. If I walk out on a movie, it's fine.
Hey, remember the screeners for Piranha 3DD? We overpaid.
Sometimes you do overpay, but.
You can overpay on free.
I'm glad I saw that through.
It was a hard go. I felt sorry for the person outside.
The ending was worth it. The ending of that thing was totally worth it.
And sometimes with a terrible movie that you have to suffer for the payoff. And that's why we sit through so many of them. We're waiting for that payoff. There wasn't one with Plan 9.
No.
Yeah.
There really wasn't.
Yeah. Well, when you see Vampyra come out of this grave... And she's kind of walking really stiff. And when you see how tightly bound that her waist is, I'm like, I can see why she's moving really slow.
Oh, yeah. I don't think she could move. Right?
No.
No. Like, just no. Oh, my gosh.
I almost think she kept her arms out the way she did to kind of keep her balance.
And breathe.
And not break.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, just give her more... mass.
She doesn't just a brisk wind, she snaps off at the waist.
Yeah. Now I will say that anybody who hasn't seen this movie should see it just because it is an iconic film in pop culture, partly because it's Bela Lugosi's last film, partly because it was for the longest time held the title of worst film ever, and partly because it really did make Tor Johnson iconic as well.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right. I mean, a lot of people don't know who he is, but you do. Everybody's seen the poster and the t-shirt.
Yeah. Tor Johnson, he must have, those contacts he was wearing must have hurt like fuck.
Oh, yeah.
Looked like he was tearing up all the time.
Yeah.
And they didn't have really nice, good ones back then. We still don't even have great ones if you have to cover your whole eye.
Yeah. Yeah. So they must have hurt like a sumbitch. He probably couldn't see a thing.
Oh, probably not. No.
Yeah. Probably scraped his eyes a bit. He probably had some damage from using those things.
Yeah. There's probably very likely, actually. Keeping his mouth open and breathing all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, he must have had terrible breath.
We don't know that. Maybe he's like, I'm a deep breath.
Yeah, he was a detective kind of looking into some weird things that are happening at the graveyard.
Yeah.
As a result of probably some phone calls from the trance from earlier that evening.
From people saying, oh my God, I saw so and so.
Yeah. And he goes to investigate and.
He's killed,
attacked by a vampire. The version of it in the remake is a really terrible headstone falls on top of him.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the fact that they tried to play homage to all of the original characters. Like I was really nice to see. But they handled it better for the most part.
Yeah, well, they were combining some of those ideas with...
an actual story?
Well, not just the actual story, but new tropes based on what he was trying to do. Like, okay, this alien ray that's resurrecting the recent dead, well, that's zombies. Mm-hmm. So now you got the zombie trope to play on, and so they're pushing that forward. Well, what do zombies look like now in 2015?
Yeah.
So everything kind of changes. I love the way they handled the aliens in the remake.
Oh, yeah.
It was one guy playing every alien.
And then one girl. Yeah. There was a male and a female.
Yeah, male and a female.
And they explain it. I love the fact they explain why they all look the same.
Yeah.
They
only have two options.
They only have the two options, and they never figured that they'd need more.
Exactly. Yeah, we're not going to be here long. We'll just all wear the same outfit.
Yeah, and I love the fact that it felt like an invasion, right? Because and they were able to do that.
And they were creepy.
Yes.
They were. They were really creepy. It was really well done. Yeah, but they managed to make an invasion using one actor.
Yeah.
That was really genius, actually.
Yeah, in fact, that guy kind of gave his best Creepy Cage impression.
Oh, totally.
Yeah. It was totally creepy Nicolas Cage.
Oh, for sure.
there was definitely some Cage inspiration there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to talk about the dead gravediggers for just a second, because I texted you about this, because it made me laugh so hard. There's like 4 seconds of footage of the two dead gravediggers, and they are so clearly dummies.
Yes.
I'm like, you had the actors, why didn't you just have them lay still for 4 seconds?
I know, right?
Save your finances, for crying out loud. Yeah. They would have done it.
Yeah,
they've already pretended to be gravediggers. Having them lie on the ground doesn't seem like too much to ask.
it just really emphasized how inept Edward really was at filmmaking.
Because I think the other thing, too, is like maybe he that part was in, but he forgot about it. And by that time, these guys had gone home. So he had to do something. But it's like you kind of have to, if you have somebody for a length of time, have them do everything they're going to do in the movie, and then they fuck off.
Yeah. Because those dummies were probably a large portion of his budget. Yeah. Unless he borrowed them from a local hospital or something.
Oh, I'm sure he did. Yeah. He probably borrowed them from somewhere.
Somebody just had a CPR dummy. You're like, can I borrow that? Yeah. It's got no legs. We'll figure it out.
Yeah, we'll just shoot from the waist up, right? No big deal.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, Gregory Walcott, he was cast as Jeff Trent, and he was kind of forced upon Ed Wood by the Christian financiers of the film.
And it shows.
And he's a big, tall, good-looking dude. He can't act for shit.
He can't act like a human. Like,
no, just sitting there as a pilot, and I'm like, well, you're obviously letting the other guy do stuff. You're just kind of sitting there with your hands between your legs.
Not even as a pilot. Sitting there is too much me to believe he's doing.
He looks uncomfortable sitting.
I worry that his existence just harms him every day. Like, he can't do it.
Yeah.
What's my motivation?
he's clearly one of those people who did not want to be there, but somebody made him do it.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Edward was made to take him, but somebody made him do it too. Right? He didn't want to. But
Yeah. But the church is like, you got to do it. He's a real handsome young man. And like,
he was an actor that was part of their church group.
Yep.
Yeah. The entire cast got baptized, by the way, is part of this.
To get the financing, which is also why I think it's great. It's Plan 9 and not Grave Robbers.
Yeah. Which is why I like Ed Wood. It's a small portion of Ed Wood, but just some of the crazy things Ed Wood had to do just to get things made is...
He was willing to do anything
and everything, and I don't know. He was kind of a special person.
See,
I'm wondering if he had some undiagnosed mental issues.
What's crazy is he's a terrible director, but I have to admire his hustle and his drive just to get something done. Like,
well,
you know,
and to do something that
it's hard to get done.
This really big idea that would have been a high budget stuff. For that high budget sci-fi movies of the 50s were doing on next to nothing. He did this. I mean, it's terrible, but he managed to make this idea on a shoestring budget that was getting big budgets for science fiction.
And
in the 50s.
The idea is actually a good idea. He had good ideas.
Yes.
Solar Night is nonsense.
And they addressed that in the remake as well. They changed it just enough for it to make sense.
Yeah.
Right. And scientific sense, no less.
Solar Night. So basically, these aliens were attacking the planet. And by the way, there's some military stuff where they're fighting the UFOs, and it's all military stock footage.
Yes, I noticed that terrible
UFOs. and how nobody notices. I mean, part of there is a sense of way government works of suppressing these things. So conspiracy theories attached to UFOs, even in the 50s, he already knew this was going to be a thing. Exactly. So there's a lot of military cover-up going on, and I think that's kind of interesting that Ed Wood kind of saw that coming.
Well, in the remake, they do a meteor rather than a UFO.
Yeah, so they do, but they also address the whole conspiracy cover-up thing.
Yes, which they do.
Again, they really did know this film very well and figured that ways to fill in those holes that Ed couldn't.
Yeah. Those guys, I mean, it was another small company that did the remake, but they did approach it from a place of love, for sure.
Oh, yeah, they adored it. Like,
yeah, there's
no
way they were mocking it. They absolutely were not mocking it in any way, except for the very opening scene.
Yeah.
I mean, there are times it takes its shots.
Yeah.
But that opening scene to me...
Their wink and nod kind of stuff.
Yeah, that opening scene to me, like, it was mocking it, but at the same time, they're mocking themselves for doing it.
Yeah, for sure, yeah.
So, like, I think that's what makes it seem so genuine. And, like, it doesn't come from a mean place when you're doing that.
Yeah, I love when Mr. Lobo goes, who would remake this thing?
Yes. Yeah.
I've fallen as far as you can go.
Yeah, and I love that opening scene because it set the tone for the whole movie. It's like, please don't take us seriously because we're not serious about this. We're serious about our love for the film, but we're not trying to make a hardcore science fiction film. This is fun.
Yeah.
Right? Oh. And they wanted you to know that this is supposed to be fun.
Yeah, and they kind of break these unwritten rules of cinema too a lot of the times. You know, they've got good-looking girls. They're not the ones getting naked.
Hey, the one who got naked, she looks fine.
She was normal. She was a normal person.
She was a normal human woman, and
then
that makes sense.
And there was that dude who I called the big dick zombie.
Yeah, my God.
Yeah. That was distracting.
No wonder he was comfortable getting naked.
Yeah.
He's this is going to be really shows good. It off all the time.
Yeah, he probably is like sitting on some website making lots of money right now.
He's the one who will talk to you in the gym with like one foot on like the bench going, so I was outside. Just like to accentuate his dick. You know he's doing this.
Yeah, no, they were pulling no punches on that, and they killed a lot of children.
They did.
I think almost every kid in that movie was eaten by a zombie.
When I was watching it,
like, holy cow!
When I was watching it, I go back to our conversation where I'm like, more children need to die in movies, and I'm like, I wonder if they listened to us.
Yeah, they heard us before we said it. That's a gift, I have to say. Yeah.
But, well, they saw the future because they live in the future because the future is where we'll be.
Yes.
Future's where we're going to live the rest of our lives.
Oh, my God.
But it never actually comes, which is the irony.
I had to open the podcast with that. That was so good. So terrible. So good.
But yeah, like, they'll break unwritten rules. There's like fourth wall stuff. There's that bit at the end. They're like, okay, well, you finally got the girl. What are you doing? And they ditch a major character in the third act because they're like, you've already accomplished what you're doing in this movie. Fuck off.
Yeah, no, I love how they just kind of like, well, this is the trope. Let's do the opposite of what
the trope
that.
Is. Yeah. I love that so much.
Yeah, I thought that was very clever.
You know what I love about this movie is the guy you expect to be the hero, the Jeff Trent character, really is fucking useless.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Right, I mean, he's trapped.
Boy, does he look like the old actor too?
A lot.
Like,
yeah,
he can act. Though.
He does. Yeah. Oh yeah, I've seen.
But
him
he doesn't in this movie. Yeah. Not really.
Like, I mean, Brian Krause has had a career.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And this is a case of where you have a good actor who's obviously been told you don't need to put all of your skills
effort
into this, right?
Yeah. Well, that definitely showed with Sarah Eshelman, who's Lucy Grimm in that movie.
Oh,
it was like she was kept trying to deliver these kind of clever Whedon-esque lines, but as dryly as possible.
I thought she was making a choice.
It was a choice.
I'm sure it was a choice. It was so bad. It was actually kind of hard to watch at times.
But that one bit between her and the jokey officer.
John
Johnson. Yeah, I loved that little. There was that little dialogue where she's basically calling him stupid.
Yeah,
right? And I loved it because it was all like that fast patter.
Yeah. They're like, it's going to kill anything it touches. Like, going, well, so that's bad. Hey, remember the part where we talked about it kills everything it touches?
Yeah, and it's, yeah, it's so fast, and if you're not paying attention, it's you would miss it. But I actually laughed out loud, and as anybody who knows me, I don't laugh out loud very often.
And the other tiny homage, back off, man! I'm a scientist.
Yes,
they do that once in a while. They'll drop some pop culture references like that, but. There was something about, I wish I would have written down the line I thought I had, about going outside. You mean outside?
The car is.
Where the car is.
Yeah.
But like they're staring ahead, not looking at each other, but just talking.
Yeah, it's like just it's literally weird. Ripping through their lines.
Yeah.
And it's just those two.
Yeah, there was some sort of chemistry there that worked really well. I really enjoyed that.
It's dry and it's funny, but, you know... I don't know. I enjoy Ed Wood's movie more because they're not trying to do that stuff intentionally.
Yeah, sometimes it feels a little bit too pandering, but I liked sometimes the fact they put in those non sequiturs that did occur in the original.
Yeah.
Like at one point, like, Paulette, calm down, serve and protect. Like, sir, why did you say serve and protect? That makes no sense. What's happening now? Like they'll just plop those in, and I'm like, yeah, those did happen in the original movie.
Yeah, they sure really did. They were all over the place. Yeah. Back to the alien attack with the military stock footage. Like right after that, Trent gets back to going to the airport. Wait a minute, why would they be allowing air traffic right now?
Yes, thank you. Yeah, there's like some narrative stuff that really needs to be dealt with.
Really, yeah. I mean, and that's what the remake. Attempted to do, right? Let's address those issues with the narrative and make sense of things that...
Why were cops looking around in a graveyard for something weird without flashlights at night? Why? How inept are you?
We don't need no stinking flashlights.
Like you had the budget to go buy model kits, but nobody had a flashlight in their homes.
Tor Johnson had a flashlight. Johnson, he went to his car to get it, and they said that they actually addressed the whole lighting thing. He said, "If you go too far, you'll be out of reach of the lights." They actually said that. There's an actual line in there, and that's
okay.
And he says, "That's okay. I've got a flashlight in my car."
I think it's some of the, with this Ed Wood one. There's points where. Like, you have to concentrate hard or you'll miss, because they'll gloss right past a bunch of stuff and you'll miss something that's important that will actually answer your question. But if you don't, like, you have to pay laser attention sometimes.
You really do, yeah, because, like I said, there are points where I checked out, I'm like, shit, I'm gonna have to go back and watch that little bit again because I don't know what happened, how I got from here to here. Yeah. And then I watch it again, I'm like, oh, no, that's because they didn't explain how they got from here to here.
Yeah.
So the aliens are set off this ray to raise... the recently deceased to kill off humanity because the dead are much easier to control to kill off humanity who may possibly one day develop because they've already dropped an atom bomb may possibly they don't have the technology yet the technology to make solar night which explodes sunlight.
And the sun, essentially.
Essentially the sun.
It's like a chain reaction, which is supposed to happen once you start
doing it. I love the explanation for it, where it's like, okay, you set off...
The worst explanation for a chain reaction ever.
But I did like the idea of, like, okay, you're setting off dynamite, and it's just following the string down to wherever.
The big explosion.
The big explosion. So, all right, I get the theory, I guess. And like, but exploding sunlight? What? All right.
Well, again, in the 1950s,
but it's the possibility that you may not. We're going to kill you because you might do this.
Yes,
one day.
That's the thing, right?
I'm like, well, wait a minute. If you guys know about this, then you already could do it. So what the fuck?
But they haven't done it. I think the point then you get the whole point of the film that humanity is stupid. We can stumble upon it, but we're fucking idiots.
But we'll use it and do it.
Yeah,
We're dumbasses. I think it's not the point that we might discover it. The point is we're so stupid. We're the toddler with an AK-47. We're dumb. We don't know any better.
Yeah. Although I do like how the aliens think that that will destroy the universe. I'm like, no, it'll just destroy our sun and anything that relies on it for whatever, warmth, whatever.
Well, they do talk about...
It would kind of kill our local system, but it wouldn't kill the universe.
They say that it would kill any planet that that sunlight reaches.
Yes. Yes.
Right? So
it is just our solar system. They say universe, but it's our solar system.
Yeah, they keep saying the universe, but no, it won't.
Although, weirdly, when you talk about any sunlight that it touches, we can see very far stars that
are
suns.
That's exactly the point.
That's true. If, so, if the sun, if I guess
their
if the,
light is touching
if the light
us.
Is touching each other, then yes, I guess
if we can
feasibly
detect,
could destroy yeah. the entire universe.
If we can detect
Ooh,
a
good.
Sun.
That is good. Yeah, I mean, so, that's bad, but good.
Yeah, it's, it, I mean, yeah. the concept was actually very interesting. I mean, yeah, knowing what we
For
know
the chain
today.
Reaction, it's sound.
Yeah. Oh, I was going somewhere and I forgot what it was.
Was it the Plan 9 was actually in the remake? Wasn't the aliens? Like, I want to know yeah. what the first 8 plans were
Thank
of the
you.
Aliens
yeah.
before they settled on Plan 9 of raising the dead. Like, oh, these are, maybe they even tried them. The first one yeah. was just, like, waving at people.
What I'm wondering, though, is, like, maybe the whole point is, like, they're, like, it's an escalation. Like, 9 is, like, we'll do 9. And if it fails, we got, like, 8 others.
Well, no, because they did, again, Eros, the
they took out a TV ad, didn't work.
They were sending radio transmissions. They talked about it. Mm. We sent transmissions and you ignored them.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, so, yeah. And then the one, is he a general or colonel, plays it for the other guy.
Yeah.
So they do have the transmissions.
Yeah, and but at first they don't understand them because they're...
Because they had to develop a translation machine.
Yeah. yeah.
The translation... it wasn't even... What was it called? The language machine?
The language machine, yeah.
Because they didn't have a thesaurus.
Yeah, but
they should have called it a decoder because it was like after the World War, they had decoders and code breakers. Yeah. So why not just apply that?
They came up with just the most nonsensical names for things.
Yeah, I think they were trying not to come up with names that for devices that already existed. I think they were trying to come up with unique names for them. I love the fact that after, I don't even know how many days have actually passed in this movie. I have no idea what the passage of time is.
Well, because the sun sets and rises at a completely random moments in time.
Oh, yeah, and Eros and his assistant are back and forth to the mothership, 3 times? I think.
Yeah.
Right? I don't know how fast they can travel, but that suggests a couple days of passage for me, right? Mm-hmm. And they raise 3 dead people.
Yes. I'm like, this is a huge, huge attack.
Invasion. Yeah, huge invasion. Yeah. Yeah.
It's
We've
a budgetary
raised 3 so
attack.
Far. Yeah.
This is going to...
Maybe they're the Ed Woods of their planet.
It's going to take a little bit of time.
They're the Ed Woods of their planet, and they're like, this is just going to take a while. We don't have the resources. Yeah. We've had to borrow money.
Not enough people are dying right now.
Yeah, I was watching it. I'm telling Val, I'm like, yeah, they're raising an army of the dead. They've got 3 so far. And like, I found that hugely entertaining. Right. And I certainly, the way that they raise the dead in the remake is, again, a really great device. Mm.
Although when they finally figure out how to stop the raised dead, I like how they just kind of fall into skeletons, even though they were fresh corpses.
Yes.
I like that, but I would have liked them to have added something where, like, going, well, all the energy in that corpse has now been used because it wasn't creating anymore, so now it's just depleted.
Yeah. No, they definitely kind of try to come up with better explanations in the remake. Like, the recently raised dead, they could still be killed by being shot through the heart because that's what's releasing the energy from the wave through their bodies.
Yeah, which drives me kind of weird because, like, you can bring somebody's heart, but, like, if they're a vegetable, they are not doing anything. Yeah.
Well, and that's – I love how the fact that the first wave of zombies got smarter on the second pulse.
I did like that.
I really like that.
The heart thing just bothered me.
Yeah, they started using tools and things. Now, Sarah, she's coming up with all these theories despite the fact that, you know, she hasn't really left her lab yet. So I'm wondering how she even knows any of this is going on.
Well, because she measured the first pulse
on her
equipment at the lab.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then she sees the second pulse, and then she starts to figure things out based on the type of pulse it was.
And they've also seen the dead.
How does she know what it's going? What it's doing?
Because big dick dead guy came alive in her lab.
But that was later.
That was later. No,
she'd already had her Plan 9 by
that point.
That
was after
her
pulse.
She figured it out wrong, though. She said the next pulse is going to kill everybody.
Yeah.
Right.
And then he rises, and she's like, "My calculations may have been off."
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was actually quite funny.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, because her whole theory was that
I was wondering if she was right there for a little while because we were seeing zombies in weird scenarios. They wasn't just graveyards and test subjects and things like that. Like, there was some chick exercising and, like, did she just die while she was exercising? Yeah. Like,
they establish if you're dead, like, the zombies kill you, but a pulse comes, then you're a zombie.
maybe, yeah, maybe she got killed in the first wave.
Yeah, if she gets killed in the first wave, then the next pulse brings her back.
Yeah, yeah, and they do explain that, too, is that each pulse is going to raise more dead because you now have more recently deceased.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. There were still some things that didn't make a lot of sense to me with the way the zombies were rising, because it felt like these were guys that were alive when the pulse happened.
Well, no, like, I mean, those guys that got killed outside of the convenience store.
Yeah, that one
they came the next pulse.
That made sense to me. So. Yeah, those type of things made sense to me. But when people were in apartment buildings, that, you know, there shouldn't have been any dead people there to begin with.
I think that's because zombies had gotten in at some point.
Yeah.
But they talk about the hospital just emptying out. Like, and dead people are going to be in the hospital.
Yeah, I suppose. You're going to have your recently dead there as well as...
Undiscovered dead.
Yeah, they're going to start munching in that first wave as well.
Yeah, so, yeah,
so
you got doctors and nurses dead.
That's
going to
be a large source right there.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Well, let's run the trailer for that second one, and we'll talk some more about this.
I believe we have a very huge problem.
Destroying the whole town. Dead guy.
Shortly after dusk, a centralized hub of an unknown form of kinetic energy formed here. After its formation, it sent out a shockwave, or pulse, of the energy. The only recently dead humans seemed to be affected by the energy. And to make matters worse, these recently dead humans are being controlled. Whatever did this, it's not from here.
Kyle's been quarantined.
No one leaves this sector alive.
Identify yourself.
And we need a plan. I got him.
All right, that was Plan 9 from 2015, written and directed by John Johnson, also starring John Johnson, starring Brian Krause, Mr. Lobo, Sarah Eshelman, Monique Dupree, Amy Hart, James Rolfe, all sorts of people.
Basically a whole bunch of actors you don't know, except for Brian Krause.
Yeah.
Well, Mr. Lobo, if you know him.
I don't.
I do now, but I didn't then.
I did because I read an article once on those people that host horror movies. That's the only reason
I probably did see him in that documentary. Yeah. I recommended it a while back. I've since forgotten the name of it. So,
but yeah, like Brian Krause, I'm like looking around and like going, okay, so there's one face I know.
And you know what's funny is Brian Krause does have a history of doing bad horror movies.
Oh, Sleepwalkers.
Yep. That's the one I was going back to.
Oh, that was probably his biggest one, wasn't it?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's a terrible movie, but I love it. It's but I love it.
I don't know. I remember seeing that initially. And
we saw it in the theater together.
Terribly disappointed with it.
Oh, yeah. It's not good, but it's so bad it's good for me.
You know, being the big Clive Barker fan I was back then, I was expecting more of it, I guess.
That was a Stephen King, wasn't it?
It was both. Stephen King,
both?
Was it?
Oh, it was both of them. Right. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, no, it was co-written between the two of them.
Yeah,
and they both have a cameo together.
Yeah, and see, I'd never read the story on it, so I didn't know anything about
it. I think it was written originally for Screen.
It was written for Screen.
I don't think there was a basis on a short story.
Oh, I'm sure that they had no idea what that director was doing to their script.
Yeah. Well, we know some of the really crazier Stephen King movies were during his drug days.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Drinking days, yeah.
Yeah.
Hey,
Maximum Overdrive would not exist if he had been completely sober.
I know.
I'm glad he was drinking because I really love Maximum Overdrive.
Me too.
It's crazy. Like, that's the thing. Give me a Stephen King movie, even if it's bad, I'll still enjoy it.
Yeah.
Like, even the worst of them, I still enjoy. I don't know why.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. There's something about those movies, even the bad ones, that kind of resonate with you.
Because you're smart enough to see the underlying story, yeah, even if it's poorly told. I think that's what it is.
I guess, yeah. If you're familiar with his work, so you can see the essence of what's happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can interpret for yourself what was supposed to happen.
Yes.
Yeah. So much
like this movie.
Yeah.
Unlike this movie. Plan 9, definitely an homage movie to the original. They are combining current tropes,
yep,
and current ideas while still kind of dancing around what you might normally think. Like, they do break rules. Like,
oh, yeah.
You don't generally kill children, but I mean, there are a lot of people cast in this movie, but they're just...
They're cannon fodder.
They're cannon fodder, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, as bad as it is, I mean, it's not, because it's not a good movie, but it really does sort of epitomize what we try to do on the show, is you take a bad movie with a good idea, mm, and you try to make it better. You try to fill in those holes. And they really did try.
Oh, right? Yeah.
Yes, they certainly did. Yeah. Things that didn't quite make sense. Well, you know, why are we on Plan 9 with the aliens? They're that bad at their jobs. It took 9 shots at this.
Yeah.
So, you know, they switched that over to the scientist, who's a new character.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's her side project that is of, yeah, the solar fission, the much better title, yeah, for what she's trying to do.
Yes, and she's managed to split photons.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and that's sort of the thing. It's sort of, it has this bit where she is the scientist, but it kind of talks to how sometimes humanity will stumble upon stuff.
Yeah.
And we're like, oh, this is great, and then just do something terrible with it. Like, it totally gets that.
Yeah. Yeah.
We don't understand. Sometimes we're so on it, but we can't.
Yeah. I still don't understand why the aliens wouldn't just blow up the planet, but whatever. Let's raise the dead and scare the shit out of everybody, yeah, when we kill them.
Well, because they wanted to colonize the planet themselves afterwards. They said that they inferred that that's, yeah, why it was only affecting humans,
yeah,
because they wanted...
Oh, well, then they can use the planet, I guess.
Yeah. They wanted animals to be left alone. Yeah. They're only killing off humans. That's the only species that's gone.
And, I mean, let's face it, why not?
Yeah, that's a weird thing. Given my current mood, I'm like, I'm kind of on board with this plan. Let's go.
Did anybody notice the fetus zombie? The fetus, there was a zombie of a larger lady, and dragging was this fetus on its umbilical cord.
I
missed that.
They got really creative with their zombies.
Yeah, I saw that, but I didn't know what it was. Like, it was just like a mass being pulled along, and I didn't get it. Yeah. But that's what it was, right? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I'm not sorry I missed that.
I was like, why?
I saw that and I'm like, and it's just a casual shot, but I'm like, oh, yeah, that's gross.
Yeah. Well, listen there, why is that falling out of her back? I thought it was like an intestine that had gone wayward, but I'm like, why is there that big mass on it? I got confused.
Yeah. And the local store that they're holed up in for a while during the attack, It apparently only sells salad dressing and jams.
I noticed that too. What the fuck moments about that store.
I loved it.
How fucking big was his delivery area? Did you see that? It was bigger than the store.
Oh, the store's tiny. Oh, yeah. The delivery area was huge.
It's attached to a warehouse.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how.
Which was just full of jam and salad dressing. Yeah.
I wonder, like, it was the purpose of maybe this place, it was always going to be ground zero, and so they just had to make sure they had enough stuff in the warehouse for when this thing went down and the military knew about it.
Well, I almost wonder if that was deliberate, because as another homage to Ed Wood, because, I mean, he did do stuff like that, right? Where, yeah, he'd just do one corner of his set for like where he'd dress it, and then whatever you saw there was what you kept seeing in the same shots as we saw in the graveyard, right?
Yeah.
So I wonder if that was kind of the same,
mm-hmm,
thing they were doing on purpose,
yeah,
is only dressing as much of the set as they absolutely had to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, for a comedy zombie movie, they did try to put a fairly serious moment that unfortunately I think falls kind of flat when everybody's kind of getting armed to kind
of
attack the zombies. And this one lady stays behind with this kid.
Her daughter.
Is it her daughter?
It is her daughter.
I was pretty sure it was the mom, but I didn't want to make... Because later on, they just kind of kept calling her lady.
Oh, yeah. No, it was definitely her daughter.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. And she grabs a big bottle of pills, and I'm like, oh, no.
Yep.
This is where you're going. And she overdoses the kid as kind of a mercy killing rather than getting eaten. And then when everybody kind of comes back and realizes what this horrible thing that she's done, and they can't save this kid... She kind of just strips down, and so the zombies sacrifices herself, realizes that she's done something terrible, and doesn't want the zombies to have too much problem eating her, I guess.
Yeah, well, the stripping down was completely inexplicable.
It was.
I think it was supposed to be a PTSD. She's lost it.
Yeah, and it was to drive a later joke, that was such an awkward scene for me, and it doesn't come off as serious as it should, and as tragic as it should. And at the same time, I mean, it feels horribly out of place within the movie, only to drive a joke later on.
There's a beat prior where I think they were trying to lead up into the seriousness of it, where she's like, what about my daughter? And the main guy kind of, like, Trent just brushes it off. He's like, oh, frick, good luck, I guess.
Yeah, just keep her as close as you can.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know what the fuck you're going to do, but we're going to get out of here. Like, it just seems like he's already abandoned her, so that's why I figured the mother did it. It's just like, ugh. Yeah, I've got no help here. Might as well just, I'll give my little girl a send off. That's all I can do.
Yeah. No, I mean, I saw the point of it all. It just didn't work for me.
You're right. It's the tone.
Especially when they make light of it later on, when we get to the soldier who's starting to strip down, and Mr. Lobo's like, oh, I've seen this before. Getting naked is a sure sign of insanity.
See, and I didn't catch that. Because I've always remembered, like, those horror movies where, like, there's the military guys like, let's get these, and he gets naked.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
That's a trope that happens.
I actually called it the commando moment.
Yeah.
And that's what I thought. Like, that's what I interpreted as. I didn't even think it was a callback to that woman
getting
naked.
Until he said the line, that's when I caught it. Because I was thinking commando moment when he started stripping off his shirt and stuff like that.
It was a total Arnie moment.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, because that's the only, I didn't even catch that.
I thought it was a direct reference to Predator, and if he had some face paint, he would have done it.
Yeah,
that's the thing. It's such a trope like you get naked when you go insane. That I didn't actually catch it. That means these people have paid a lot of attention to a lot of movies over many years.
Yeah, no kidding. Like, that was not something I would have thought about either.
Yeah,
and I've never really considered a trope. But then when they kind of when you're pointing directly at it, you're like, oh, yeah.
It really
that
is.
That is a thing.
That is a thing they do.
And as we talk about it, the more I realize how genius this remake really was. I mean, it's still not a good movie, but there's a lot of genius moments in it.
I was entertained by it.
Yeah.
There's
a lot
of entertainment to be had. And what's great is, like, when they totally... I love when they break the rules. Because you're like, damn it, you're right.
Yeah.
I love that break.
Yeah, no, they break a lot of the rules and take the tropes. Make it look like they're going to do it, and then they do the complete opposite.
And
they
completely turn on its ear, and it works most of the time.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Aside from the occasional bad setup.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was a bad setup. I mean, it could have been a really good
moment
in the film in an otherwise lighthearted
I think if the mother hadn't have gotten naked and had just lost it and just walked outside, that moment would have been fine. Because you could have still had that moment where he knows, when you get naked, I've seen enough movies to know that this guy's insane. That would have worked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and all the bodies that are dropping, they do eventually become zombies too, which is kind of nice. Now, it's not unlike the other one, it's not the guns of the aliens that are making them rise, which... I'm like, okay, if you are going to your ruler... to approve this plan, why are you already armed with a gun that already does the plan that you haven't approved yet?
Maybe it's a multi-purpose gun?
Yeah, you just have the Raise the Dead setting on the gun.
Well, no, it's like
instead of set to stun, it's set to revive.
It's better to beg forgiveness than ask permission.
Oh, yeah, maybe it's one of those moments.
Because they'd already raised Vampyra before they even asked permission.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. They were already doing it.
So, yeah, like, that was, I think that was the whole point. It was like, yeah, this is our plan. This is just going to happen now. We're really just doing this as just courtesy.
Yeah, you really aren't doing anything at all. We realize you're just a useless figurehead. We'll just at least make it look like you're making decisions.
Yeah. Yeah, and those uniforms, oh my gosh.
Oh, they were totally 50s sci-fi.
They I awesome. Love those. That's why, because they are 50s sci-fi. Yeah. If it's shiny, it's an alien.
But there's something, like the guy they picked, this kind of, who I'm going to call their Nicolas Cage alien guy, had a great intense look when he was doing things. And the fact that he kept repeating all the time, despite them killing aliens constantly in this movie, it just, he comes off really creepy. Like, oh, I love sure. the way they handled that.
Oh, and
it's just those two aliens all the time, over and over and over
again. Yeah, no, and like that, and when we talk about moments of genius, that was certainly one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? They use the same actor and save themselves a bunch of money, and it looks really cool. Yeah. And it works.
Oh, I mean, the fact that he could sell that intensity was awesome.
And the fact that sort of it just gives that note where people are like, wait, that's the same guy over there. Like, to have people realize, like, oh, there's just two of them. If I see that guy, it's one of them, but I don't know how many.
Yeah. Hey, if you see that guy, kill it. Yeah. See that lady, kill it.
Yep.
Yeah, it makes it easy to spot them for sure. But the only moment where it fell flat for me for that was when they first show up, because you don't see them until they just sort of show up at one of the...
In the parking battles. Lot underneath the mall, because there's an escalator there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I would introduce their faces earlier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, we were seeing them at the base, because, the base really, like, they talk about it, but you don't really see what's going on there until they get there, right?
Yeah. Well, there was the guy, the alien in the store.
There's the alien in the store, which threw me, because I was, like, going, he looked, you know that guy that was running along, we're alive, and then gets... immediately taken down. Yeah. It looked like the same suit, so I got confused for a minute. I thought he was changed differently.
Right. Well, maybe too many suits in the scene.
Yeah, like you have one guy in a suit and then just leave, like, it's just the alien in a suit. They're like, hey, we're just a small town.
No, thinking like what they were doing with the aliens. I'm like, this is something they would have probably pulled off in X-Files. Like, it actually was a really good idea.
Oh, the ooze.
Yeah. Oh, and they got the ooze, too, yeah. They had the slime, the black slime, in their base of operations. Although, why there was a secret throw switch in what looked like an alien kiddie pool, I have no idea. It just made no sense. Was it an acid pool or something?
I was wondering.
I don't know, because he's bleeding a lot that he wasn't bleeding before when he goes in that pool.
Yeah, and it just kind of falls over. I'm like, what's going on here? I don't know.
He's not drowning.
No. And it's not like the sizzling or anything, so I don't know if there's an entire battle going on in this kiddie pool that we're just not seeing.
And I think that was a deliberate Ed Wood moment. It's like, I'm going to do something, and I'm not going to explain what's going on there.
Yeah, yes. Because they went through the trouble of explaining so much of Ed Wood that we're going to give you something makes no sense.
We're going to give you your own moment.
Yeah, because you have to do that, right? I mean, well, you don't have to, but I could see that they would want to do that.
If you're going to do an homage, you have to do one.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they go out of their way to really explain a lot of the more weirder things. Although they don't acknowledge the night and day thing.
No,
no,
which is just bad filmmaking.
Yeah, really. I think they could forego that for sure.
Yeah. And they made the connection between the old man and the wife a little earlier that hangs himself.
Yes,
yeah,
that is the surrogate for Bela Lugosi and Vampira.
Yes.
That they were husband and wife, but they still kept it young. He's this old dude, and she's young, and the aunt,
and she
too.
Confused
and she's
me.
The aunt to Lucy.
Yeah, and she does not look... She looks like Lucy's cousin.
Yeah, no, they look the same age.
Yeah.
She might be 10 years older, maybe.
Yeah.
That's it.
I just kept thinking, I'm like, good on you, old man.
Well, that one confused me because I knew she said Lucy thought they were being controlled, and right around this time that she said they were being controlled, that's when like the Vampira shows up. And I got confused thinking that Vampira was going to be one of the aliens, because it looked like she was trying to control the other zombies in there. She didn't look like any of the other zombies.
Yeah, I thought so too.
She was always hanging around with Grandpa.
Yeah. But they were trying to develop a love story even in their zombified versions there, which didn't quite work.
No,
it didn't work.
It didn't work, no. I appreciate the thought, but and it wasn't really necessary.
Having them kind of, when everything's over and they've defeated the aliens or whatever, and they flop over with their hands clasped together, I'm like, oh, is that what you're trying to do? All right.
Yeah. They wanted you to go, aw, and you went,
You should tweak a little earlier than that.
Yeah, there just wasn't enough there to, like, whatever.
See, and that's why I got partially...
Together in death.
I got really confused when they attacked that chick in the shower, Because I'm like, it seemed like she was controlling. She's not doing anything. And he's attacking a chick where they put in like a real big zoom in on a tit.
Yeah.
Like really close and lingering while blood runs down. And I'm like, and then she dies. And I'm like, oh, but like lady didn't do anything. What's going on here?
No, there are definitely, they had some fun with the zombie attacks and not a lot of them made sense, to be honest.
No.
Especially when they started building the ram. I did appreciate that the zombies were getting a little bit smarter, and maybe that's just the aliens getting more control over their drones. They called them
drones.
Or
their previous versions that had enough energy. Maybe that second wave, each wave puts in more energy, therefore more...
And they get more brain function or something like that.
More control, or you know, they are drones, so maybe it's the aliens that are getting more control over what those guys are doing. And we do see, as the more dead, that we see more aliens as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
Because enough time has passed. Like, yeah, I think that power source, they need to have something where they would have addressed the power source was eventually getting more power to it. It was powering up a lot more. Because,
and I think Lucy tried to explain that as part of her dialogue, where she talks about how the pulse gets four times bigger every time.
Yeah.
But she doesn't really, but they kind of gloss over how calm it gets bigger every time.
Yes.
Right. And that, I mean, again, that's, you come down to suspension of disbelief and the fact that these guys are working with a limited source of material and limited science, right?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. For sure. But it was still fun, though.
Oh, I thoroughly enjoyed the remake. I was worried. Especially after watching the original, going, oh, how can you remake this? Make it watchable. And they did. They made it watchable. They didn't make it a great film, but they made a watchable film.
Yeah, no, I mean, you could tell it's a small little studio and they're just making whatever for fun.
Yeah, and it looks like just a bunch of pals are like, guys, let's do this. And they do.
Yeah, and they do it reasonably well. I mean, that first scene probably cost more than the entire original movie did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They definitely spent a lot more money. And it's still low budget kind of remake, but you know, by their budget is probably 10 times what Ed Wood got to play with. So,
oh, for sure. And it was like, and they did so much.
There's probably a couple million there.
Yeah. At least a couple million, I would think. Yeah. Yeah, unfortunately, we didn't find the budget for it, but.
No, I couldn't find any dollar value on it.
I don't think we're supposed to.
Up until watching this, I didn't know Darkstone Productions even existed. So.
Right. they might have been made for this film. We don't know that.
You know, entirely possible.
This could be their first feature.
I like the fact that they used a meteor as well, because again, that helps control their budget, right?
Yeah.
So they do a fairly simple special effect and fairly inexpensive, and then you never have to see it again.
Yeah, and you don't see like the big military with spaceship battles that Ed Wood tried to do.
No, they turned it on its ear and they made them ground forces and that had seen this before.
Yeah. Right?
This is not the first time they've dealt with this.
Yeah,
alien invasion. They have the soldier who goes nuts.
Well, they mentioned that in the original movie too. That you know, they've had to do this before. Yeah.
Yes,
but they've done it in a better way, where they've quarantined this town. They're not letting anybody out. They're killing zombies and humans alike.
Yeah,
because it's a cover up.
Yeah,
which is it's the only problem I have with
we saw this in the Blob.
True, and then like the one bit of dialogue where Mr. Lobo is talking about like, well, but what if they're just trying to contain it? And I would have been the lies like, yeah, no, they know you're alive. They don't care.
Yeah.
They are going to kill you.
Well, and this is another trope they turned on its ear, because there's that scene where one of the soldiers says, you know what? Fuck you.
I'm not killing you.
He takes a moral objection.
Yeah, and I love that, because that's one of those things you don't see in that trope. It's like,
oh yeah.
Right? It's usually a civilian who manages to sort of turn the military forces on their ear.
And
right?
as well, what they do with that one, usually if any military guy does turn on his commanding officer, he doesn't shoot him. In this one, he goes for it.
Yep.
And I love that, because it's like he's committed. He's not going to do it. But in other ones, they're like, sir, and then they take away their gun and then they keep him and then he becomes a problem later on.
Yeah.
No, this guy takes care of the problem.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then he turns to his buddy and says, are you going to be a problem too? And he says, no. It was actually kind of funny.
Yeah, loved it.
Yeah, so they go with that serious moment to a little bit of a lighthearted joke there.
Right? And then you got these forces that are combined together, like Mr. Lobo and the guy, because at one point Lucy's taken away by one of the evil aliens one direction, and then crazy naked guy went the other direction. So the cop and the other guy, like, it was great knowing you, and they shake hands and part ways.
Yeah. Kudos to Amy Hart for basically filming a movie in her underwear the whole time.
Yeah.
Which was weird. Okay, this was one thing I thought of the entire time.
In her, like, basically her lingerie, because they just finished having sex before all this, and he takes off again.
Yeah, like her, like, little teddy set and panties. Now, I don't, this is just me, but I've been naked. I don't need to put that stuff back on.
I was kind of curious as to having had a nude sex scene that she wound up putting all the shit back on.
Yeah, no,
She wasn't wearing before they had sex because she was in her casual clothes because she wasn't expecting him home.
Maybe she was getting ready for round two.
I think that was probably what you're supposed to infer.
But if you're getting ready for round two, here's the deal. I am already naked.
You already unwrapped the present.
I am already naked. Like, really, I would get up to make eggs, but it's like, it's a tank top and panties. That's still pretty good.
She probably said, I'm not going to run around the movie naked.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or no, but like a tank top and a pair of panties. That's fine. I wouldn't mind looking a little practical.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was odd that it was lingerie, not sort of something you would throw on to go to the kitchen.
Like, if you're cooking eggs in a frying pan, you do want something on.
But you don't want your very expensive lingerie because it's going to get ruined by grease.
Yes. Exactly. See? Damn. That was one thing that bothered me the most.
I was baffled by the fact she's wearing lingerie, yes.
Yeah. Well, I'm like, if you're making eggs, you're probably not heading around two anytime soon. Like, you
well,
just
he was
need
supposed
to
be sleeping. Yeah, she couldn't sleep. Or if you're gonna go make him something, like, why is the lingerie on? Like, you've been in, you're naked already. Like, I don't know how you guys are, but from my understanding, is when I'm already naked, that's pretty good.
Yeah, I just grab for the robe at that
point. And it works.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, why would you just not throw the robe on over top if you're... Why put in the effort? Because, I mean, I've never worn lingerie, but I don't imagine it's particularly easy to get into a corset.
But Ed Wood has.
And there's some bits of it that are pokey.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, if I might need a bra to keep everything in place. That's fine. But bra and panties, yes. But like a court, no. Just a hard
yeah,
no.
She had a big corset on. Yeah. I'm like, all right, whatever. I guess they just want her to look chesty the whole movie.
Yeah. And
she does.
She does. That corset does its job.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, if you are filming this, if I'm filming any movie, I'd have a
they
bra.
They do explain it. They do totally fucking explain it. I completely forgot. When they're explaining about the pillow and the scent on the pillow,
yeah.
She's sitting there. She's about to have that conversation with him about to ask him to quit his job. And she's sitting there. And she goes, oh, more boob, right? So she's
already wearing the lingerie at that point.
Oh, she was already planning to have that chat with him.
She was, yes. So she was all dressed up for this
when
chat.
When he decides to go to the store. So she's practicing the chat she's going to have. Yeah.
Okay, so that's a chat outfit.
It's a chat outfit.
She's trying to distract him from...
Like, here are your two reasons for not going back to your job for 2 months.
That's why she's wearing
again,
the lingerie.
Also achieved by naked.
Maybe, but again, give him a reason to unwrap something.
Yes.
I think I totally get it now.
Yeah, I see what they were trying to do. I don't know if it worked, but now I see there's at least a reason for her for the
got to give the tease.
Yeah.
I still don't buy it. But what am I going
to
do?
I buy it more now.
I'm not sure why he went to the store. Did he suddenly have a craving for jam?
He had like a thing of champagne, which was weird because Mr. Lobo was at the counter going, please give me liquor. And the guy's like, I can't sell you liquor. There's late. The guy behind him has champagne. What?
Champagne's not liquor. Champagne's alcohol, but it's not liquor.
Okay, well, didn't he say alcohol? I can't
maybe,
tell you alcohol.
Maybe, yeah, I don't remember, but yeah, because he was asking for like hard liquor.
Just imagine this. In liquor stores, you can't go in, you can have beer, but you can't have this. They don't do that.
Why are you
Well,
open?
They can in the United States, though. You can go to convenience stores and buy beer and wine, but you can't buy hard liquor.
That's
you
right.
You cannot buy hard liquor.
For American listeners, we can't buy beer and stuff at the grocery store, so we have to actually go to an actual liquor store.
It's a store that only sells liquor.
Yes.
So for us, it doesn't make a lot of sense because if you were going to get liquor, that's
all
they sell.
The liquor store's open.
Yeah. That's all they sell. Yeah. So it's like, so you're not going to sell me the one thing you do sell.
Yeah, well, although this one place does sell just jam.
And apparently booze.
And salad dressing.
And salad dressing.
Jam and salad dressing.
It's a heavy night. I've got jam, I got salad dressing, I got booze, I'm good.
And they do mention batteries, because when the guy...
Oh, yeah.
You know, they...
That was funny.
The CB radio, and the CB Ooh. Radio conks out, and he destroys the CB radio. We do have more batteries. We're in a store.
Oh, and there's a chainsaw. The kid finds a chainsaw at one point in one area of the store, which is also beside, like, a bookshelf filled with VHS.
But that this small town thing, that actually kind of makes a bit of sense.
I know, I love that. I was like, yeah. I wanted to like stop him. Like, I wonder what they have. Do they have something I want? Like, I
just... leave it to you to put the movie on pause to go shopping. in
well,
a
for VHS, I love VHS.
I know you do. This whole show is about antiquated technology.
It really is.
I started with you and Jeff.
But the thing is, I'm not even a hipster. I have sincerity behind the reason I like things.
Because it still works.
Yes.
And because you can get stuff on VHS that you still can't get on DVD.
Hell yeah.
Absolutely true. Yeah.
I found some bizarre shit you ain't going to find on DVD.
Ever. And probably for good reason. But I want to talk about the guys, the people that were in the store originally, because there was quite a few people in the store.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right? Because there was the...
There's a lot of people who need jam.
Yeah, there was a store owner and one of his staff members. That's a third of the people who were in the store, yeah. Pretty much, right? And then there was the two brothers that they let into the store because they were getting chased by zombies.
Yep.
Isn't the co-pilot there too?
Co-pilot's there as well. He runs into them there.
Because he was having beer out front with one of the guys that gets killed and gets turned into a zombie.
Right, yeah. The worst actor in the movie, the airport controller. He was awful.
Oh, he was bad.
I don't know what he was trying to do there. He's Yosemite bad. Sam?
Yeah, I don't know what he was, but yeah, by far the worst actor.
Yeah,
in the
movie. And they must have known so because they killed him off pretty quickly.
Yes, they
were. Oh, fine. That is fine.
Yeah.
But then they had, what was it, Jimmy? And the other kid was like his younger brother or something like that. Fucking hated Jimmy. I was glad when he died.
I would expect them to be more important characters, but they really were still ended up being fodder.
And they do, when you're putting this group together, they don't give you any kind of time to get to know the characters that are dying.
No.
So you don't give two shits when they do.
Yeah. But you sort of do get to know Jimmy and his brother because they were visiting their mother's grave, and you see Jimmy in an earlier scene with the weird gypsy
the next
family.
Door neighbors.
Oh, what is with them? I don't know. The informed people, the daughter and the grandfather that knew everything
that was actually
going on.
I didn't get that.
I didn't.
And we never got an explanation.
No, we never did.
No, that was a very Ed Wood add-in that just didn't make sense because they offered nothing new to the film.
No. You could have edited them out completely.
Yeah, and he would not have missed a damn thing.
None of their scenes made any sense at all. Every time we got to them, back to being confused.
Yeah.
Yep.
I don't know.
Maybe this is stuff they're throwing into theirs, hoping like 20, 40 years down the road, somebody will remake it again and make sense of the shit they put in theirs.
I would love it if that was true. That would make me so happy.
Let's go with that.
They've started something.
Yeah.
But when you're talking about how you don't really get to know anybody like in the store, these characters are meaningless. I love it because when you think about like if anything of this like were to happen, we all think we're the main character in our movie. We're fucking fodder. We come in and nobody knows anything about us. We're going to die quickly. People you even know and love, they're going to die quickly. It's just going to happen. I like the randomness of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll go with that, actually. I kind of do like it.
Yeah. And one of the greatest lines where the guy is talking about how they figure out they're dead people. They're not like rabid people. They're dead people. It's like, that's Dick's whale. We buried him like 3 weeks ago. And I hope he was dead when we did.
Yeah, that was great. Yeah. Yeah, no, it was that there were lots of really great one-liners in this movie,
and a lot of them explanation one-liners.
Yeah, yeah, like they not only did they make you laugh, but they also made sense.
Yeah, you're like, people need a little help here, so we'll put in a joke and a line that'll explain everything.
Yeah,
it's efficient.
Now, I think we could all agree that neither one of these are good movies, but they're entertaining movies.
Yes,
both are entertaining movies.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I will say the remake was more watchable.
Yeah,
I disagree. I enjoyed Ed Wood's movie more, but because there is a sincerity to what he's trying to do, where these guys are trying to, other guys are trying to make sense of this honest mess. You know, Ed Wood didn't set out to make a bad movie.
No,
oh no,
these guys did.
Well, it's sort of like...
There's an intent when you remake something that's already bad, when you're remaking a bad movie into, you know, trying to make it better while still maintaining the bad. Like, they're paying... They're trying to intentionally make a cult movie, whereas that was not what Edward was trying to do. He thought he was great.
And it's really hard to mimic naivete.
Yeah.
It's either you are naive or you are not... when you're trying to do something, it's hard to mimic that in sincerity, like just that sincerity of trying to make something good that you believe in. To mimic that is hard because then it comes off as sarcastic most of the time.
Right.
Yeah. No, to clarify, I said it was more watchable. I didn't say it was necessarily better.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because I'm sorry, but Plan the Original, I did lose focus and check out while I was watching it. Mm-hmm. Whereas I didn't really with the remake because it was cohesive enough that I didn't get disconnected.
Ooh.
Right. That being said, I have an immense respect for the first movie because you're exactly right. It was an honest attempt at making a movie, and he thought he was making something that was really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it brought back something that reminded me that I miss about some of the old movies is a female lead who's got that deep kind of, oh yeah, honey, like it's not that like little girl. It's just like she's deep, husky, and self-assured. And I'm like, I kind of like that. Like she's firm with everything she says. And I'm like, I love that
Everybody
voice.
Everybody had like great voices. Maybe it's just the way the microphones worked back then. Or
maybe.
And the way people talked in the 40s and 50s is very different from the way we talk now.
Yeah. Maybe that's it. A love of that.
Yeah. Where I don't know. There's little things that I like and... this cheesiness, especially when you're doing aliens and things, they have zero idea what the future is going to look like, and I love how that looks.
Yeah, and like you say, like just the corner, you can tell this is like a tiny little area that they've made to look like the backyard of their house.
Yeah,
and if you pan like 2 inches right, it's like the ship.
Yeah, the shots with Bela Lugosi outside the house is most of that's actually outside of Tor Johnson's actual home. Which I'm like, ooh, Tor wasn't doing well either, was he?
No.
This might have been one of his first roles, though.
No, I think it was, wasn't it?
No, he had a long list. I actually looked at his filmography, and this is like somewhere near the end of his career, actually.
Oh, wow. Ah.
Yeah, because he stopped making movies in like 1961, 1962, aside from the odd appearance on television, I think.
So it never really got better for him.
Really got better for him.
So he was always this C, B list kind of... guy. Yeah. I like how he's kind of another figurehead for that era, like him and Betty Page and Vampira, like, and Ed Wood. Yeah. They're all kind of this figurehead for the B movies of the 50s.
Yeah.
They really are. Yeah, they are the sort of the poster people for them. And you know what, rightfully so. Right? I mean, they earned those rights.
Yeah.
I mean, certainly Ed Wood did and Betty Page as the
pinup girl
and Vampira as the queen of schlock horror.
Yeah. Right?
And then Tor just because I mean he looks so iconic. I mean,
There's some of those and we still have some of those actors now where there's just a look to them. Like, oh God, who was the guy? Ben Stein and like Ferris Bueller. Every time you see him, you're like, I know who that guy is.
Yeah.
The guy who is the other ghost in Ghost, I can't remember his name. He's very odd looking.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm blanking on his name.
Yeah, but he always was that, you see him and you're like, yeah, I know that guy. But there's like a bunch of actors, you see that face, you're like, frick, I've seen that face so many times.
Yes.
They're prevalent, but they might not be famous.
Vincent Schiavelli. That's
Thank you.
Of, yes.
Yeah, and yeah, it just comes down to a look.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. Richard Mall. Yeah.
Yes.
Sorry, we've been watching Night Court. I was mixing up his name with his TV name for a second.
Yeah. Bull.
Who we've covered a couple of times. Yes. In this
exactly.
show. Yeah. He was in the Sword and the Sorcerer episode.
Yeah. And he's like, and again, that iconic look. As soon as you see him, you're like, oh, I know him, right? Usually you go, oh, I know him. Yeah. That's Bull Shannon. But but for fans of sci-fi and horror.
Yeah. No, guys our age go Bull Shannon.
Yeah.
Anybody in the 20s has no idea who that dude is.
Exactly. Randall Tex Cobb. I can say that. Nobody knows.
Oh, yeah. Here's another guy who was in everywhere. You knew him as soon as you saw him.
Yeah.
And if you didn't see him first and you heard his voice first, you knew who was coming.
Mm-hmm.
It's such an identifiable look and voice.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Who's been in movies that we've done as well. Blind Fury.
That was Blind Fury. Yeah. So.
Exactly.
Yeah, and Richard Mull was in two of ours because he was in the house too.
And as well.
True.
Yes. Yeah. Look at all of the back catalog we're giving you guys.
Exactly. See, a lot of it's as we go along, like our shows. We're weaving a tapestry.
Yes, we've done Oscar-winning movies. We've done movies that will never ever be considered for anything. Let alone at least this one would have got some really terrible worst movie awards if they existed at the time.
Although some of the ones, all they get the award is that we just love them, like with our hearts.
Yeah, we covered on the show. That's an award in and of itself. Yeah. We have a huge gamut of films, and we're going to do the worst of the worst and the best of the best, and a lot of in between.
We aim at everything. Nothing's safe.
Yeah, and that's right. We've proven nothing is sacred.
Yeah, and yes, we have. And like, you know what? Probably about 80% of the time, we have no idea what we're getting ourselves into, too.
That's true. Yeah. Had any of you guys seen Plan 9 prior to this?
No.
Mm-mm. I've seen it reenacted through Ed Wood. That's what I saw.
Well, I mean, I'd definitely seen Ed Wood, and I think I tried to watch the original Plan 9, and much like you, my original intent, I probably fell asleep on it. Like, I remember pieces of it, and certainly remember trying and remembering how bad it was. I don't know. I have much different eyes than when I tried to see it the first time, and I so much more enjoyed it this time around.
And I did enjoy it. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, I'm not hacking on it, because it was truly entertaining to watch, even though you couldn't understand half of what was going on. Val has seen it, believe it or not.
Yeah?
Yeah, Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Oh, yes, of course.
They definitely covered it.
They covered it.
There's a good riff tracks on it as well.
Yeah, so, and she said, you should have watched that version. I'm like, yeah, but then it would have distracted from what I was trying to do, right?
Yeah.
But
yeah, I definitely didn't want to watch, like, I watched Ed Wood during this because just reminiscing about that movie again. Mm-hmm. And I tried to find some documentaries, but I couldn't.
It's terrible.
Yeah, and I'm kind of glad I hadn't, I didn't want to go through riff tracks and stuff because, you know,
it colors
I don't want
your thinking of it.
Yeah,
right?
It colors your thinking, and I don't want it to steal anybody's jokes.
Oh, for sure.
Unintentionally.
Yeah, it's better to steal them without knowing that you've stolen them, right? Yeah,
exactly.
Oh, for sure.
Plausible deniability. Yeah.
Exactly.
So I try not to look at things like riff tracks and stuff because, you know, I may want to do that on the show myself. Yeah,
but now I may go back and watch the Mystery Science Theater.
Like, I was watching this movie. I'm like, we might have to do a commentary on this someday.
For sure. We should do a commentary one time. We're like, what on earth? Yeah. What's happening?
Hey guys, if you want to see us or listen to us do a commentary along with the movie that you want to watch, let us know what that is. And hey, just let us know if you think that might be a good idea or if other people have done it enough. We might do that once or twice a year or something. If you're interested, but we can only do that if you tell us if you are interested. And you can do that on our social media at Invasion Remake on Twitter, Invasion the Remake on Facebook, and invasiontheremake@gmail.com. You can also leave us your questions, comments, and requests for the film. We do take challenges, and we may have another one coming up here soon.
Ooh.
There's one I talked about last year with you guys in private that I've been holding off on, and I think I might be ready. So
it's time.
It might be time. Also, help us out. Share out the show. Share it out on your social media. Tell your friends. Tell your neighbors. Yeah. You're listening to it on your iPod or whatever. Get their device. Subscribe them. We're on iTunes. We're on Stitcher. We're on Google Play Music, Blueberry, Audio Boom, Player FM, TuneIn Radio. We are everywhere. Even frickin' YouTube.
Yeah.
Frickin' YouTube.
We've sent out a pulse. We just need you to put that second pulse out and then the third pulse. And
that's right.
Cover the world.
And so on and so on and so on. And we might light up the world.
Unfortunately, that's our plan one. We haven't figured out eight more.
No, that's all we got, really. We really need you. Also,
we're not that good at Invasion.
Also, leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes and leave us a short review if you like as well. This helps rise us in the ranks and it helps get people more earballs.
Earballs on them.
Earballs. It gets more earballs on the show, you know, so it helps people find the show. So do us that solid. Just click those stars and leave a, and it's great, or whatever in the comments. Helps us out immensely. So please go do that for the, you know, hour and a half, 2 hours plus that we give your earballs every single week.
Every week.
We are dedicated.
We are. We've never missed a week. And we've been doing this for, a year and a half now.
We may miss an individual any given week, but we don't miss a week.
We don't miss a week.
No, and Jay has not yet missed a week.
No.
No, I've been on every episode.
You will never hear an episode without Jade.
No, really, you won't.
Because I'm the only one who knows to run this, all this equipment.
And he could try and teach us, yeah. But we'd be like,
We can't be bothered.
Well, no, ultimately, it wouldn't be right to do it without Jay in the first place.
Exactly.
Right? What if I had laryngitis or something?
Oh, you'd come and run the equipment, and then
you'd be here.
You'd be here, and we'd hear you go,
We'd give you cue cards, and you could write stuff out, like, Jay says, blah, blah, blah.
That'd be hilarious. Even if because I've never had Larry James.
What is it, Jay? Is Timmy in a well?
Write down, gonna need another Timmy.
Oh, damn it.
Another 50s trope, need Timmys and Jimmys.
Yeah.
Exactly.
All right, well, that was Plan 9 from Outer Space. Stupid, stupid, stupid. Awesome.
But enjoyable, stupid.
Yeah, I really enjoy both these movies for very different reasons.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. They both had a lot of qualities that I really enjoyed, and I'm glad I watched them both.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, the Plan 9 remake, it's got a 4 out of 10 on IMDb. And generally, given sci-fi horror, that's not bad.
Well, it's in some ways, I've seen ones that are ranked higher that I would have put lower than this movie, if I'm completely honest. This one's self-aware enough, I enjoy
it. Yeah, considering this week, Monster Trucks opened to an immense bomb at a $125 million budget. This seemed somewhat appropriate to talk about this week. Like, Paramount's totally written off that movie. It's a $100 million write-off right there.
Yep.
Sometimes I hear that and I'm like going, I think they're doing it on purpose. Every once in a while I'm like, you want this one to bomb. You want to lose money so you don't have to pay some tax. I'm just figuring there's something happening.
It turns out it was the idea of I think the guy who's the studio head at the time. He's not anymore. I can understand why.
I'll betcha.
But I think he was let go before this movie. They couldn't stop it. You know, from the 4-year-old kid's brain comes, well, of course, there's aliens and trucks. That totally sounds like a kid idea to me.
Yes.
So it's like
I just watched the trailer today. And,
it's a 10 times worse Maximum Overdrive. Is that what you're getting at?
I haven't seen the movie. The trailer was.
But you said aliens in trucks. So that's what made me think Maximum Overdrive.
No. Like, these are big kind of squid-like aliens in trucks.
Oh, okay. They're driving the trucks.
They're kind of in the whole body of the truck.
So monster trucks. I get it. Yeah. I get it. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't. And it looks very kid friendly too, but. Oh.
See, maybe yet.
I thought this was a good idea. And I think kids would probably love it. But who in their right mind would throw $125 million at that idea?
Yeah. Is it live action?
Yeah.
Okay. See, I can understand a cartoon monster trucks.
Yeah. I understand.
I would get into that.
I also understand why they buried it in January.
Yeah.
True. I always wondered about, like, the January burial that they have for movies. Like, I kind of understand it, but at some points I'm like, we need something in January. It's just, the New Year's come, Christmas is over. It's just so sad.
Well, and it is. You know, you're not going to get a big hit in January because the dollars aren't there. Everybody's kind of recovering from Christmas. Yeah.
People are depressed.
Yeah.
No, it's not depressed. Their wallets are depressed. Yes. Their wallets don't have anything left. It's just they open it up and little moths fly out. Like, nobody's got the cash to go to the movies.
Unless, of course,
nothing's going to be overly successful.
Unless, of course, they watch that ad about playing debit in the movie theaters, like da 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 da.
But it's amazing how many genre films come out in January that probably aren't cheap. We got Underworld and Resident Evil and this monstrosity of a movie, and like, these are not cheap movies.
No.
Like, well, none of these movies are going to make their budget backs in January. I don't get it.
No, you never know. Like I said, because I mean, there's movies that are showing big box office in the first couple of weeks of January already. Like, Star Wars is still, like, the second week of January was still doing huge box office. And I mean, even though there was another movie that came out, like, the name escapes me, that actually did beat it in the box office, but they were still big numbers for January.
I wonder if sometimes they do drop some of these in January when they know that they're sort of like cult and people love them, and they're giving them the grace period to gain some traction further in the year.
Well, you know what? In general, I think, like, what we used to think of the summer blockbusters is just all year long now.
It really is, and that's a good thing. It's a good thing, though. I mean, we saw last year how well Deadpool did in February.
But
it's good, but then you have the other ones that just tank so bad.
Well, I think it's bad because it's really burying these smaller movies now.
Oh, that, completely.
You know, used to get better distribution and now are probably getting really small distribution in lieu of
or,
the big...
Or yeah, not like last year with that He Never Died. They opened the same day as Star Wars. They didn't get a theater in Calgary.
No. Yeah, there's more than once now where, and Maggie too.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted to go see that and I couldn't.
Well, and then,
just none of the big theater chains carried
it. The only way any of them actually get any traction or release in a big theater is if they might get Oscar nominated, like Moonlight. That was released like last year and is now getting kind of a semi re-release
because
in
the
major theater chains.
Yeah.
So,
at least Oscars can give a good movie a second life.
Yeah, but I mean, still, there's some ones that they're not going to be Oscar movies, but they're great films to watch. Like, I stumble upon most of mine when I go to, like, the second run theaters, which are great because I can, like, see movies I wouldn't normally have seen because they're not getting a major release.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. This is a discussion for another day, and maybe we'll throw that in our Oscar season special.
Oh, sure.
Because, I was ready to sign off 10 minutes ago.
Okay.
So that's it. I'm Jason.
I'm Sam.
I'm Trish.
And we're out of here.
Bye-bye, everybody.
See ya.
Even now, your scientists are working on a way to harness the sun's rays. The rays of sunlight are minute particles. Is it so far from your imagination they cannot do as I have suggested?
Why, a particle of sunlight can't even be seen or measured.
Can you see or measure an atom? Yet you can explode one. A ray of sunlight is made up of many atoms.
So what if we do develop this solenoid bomb? We'd be even a stronger nation than now.
Stronger. You see? You see? Your stupid minds! Stupid! Stupid!
That's all I'm taking from you.
Get back here, you jerk!